Welcome to Jedi Alliance, everybody. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about some news that came out about The Last Jedi, a little bit of news that came out about the Han Solo film, and a couple of questions that have just been sitting in the back of our minds. They've been plagiarizing the back of... That was a bad one. Just stay tuned and there'll be more bad jokes. That's it.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Jedi Alliance.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Jedi Alliance. This is going to be a fun one because I'm bloody exhausted. My ears are still ringing. Somebody's volume's up.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're all professionals here. That's not remotely true. It's not me.
Oh, it's super true.
Yeah, well. Welcome to Jedi Alliance. I'm one of your hosts, the internet's Mark B. Donicky. You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donicky. Joined as always by the one, the only, Michael Young.
Hey, what's up, guys? You can find me at One Yes, which is O-N-E-Y-O-U-N-G-S-T-A.
Hey, and joining us today as a special guest, we got Nate Miller.
What up, guys? Happy to be here. I mean, it's hard to follow up after that joke. That joke
don't worry. There's plenty more.
What's going on, guys? I'm Nate Miller. You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate.
So we brought Nate in because not only is he a friend of the show, but he's a good person. And you know what? He deserves it.
he's a very good person. I'm prepared to debate that.
That's what the Duel of Debates question is going to be at the end of the show. Is Nate a good person? But we have a long-standing tradition here at Jedi Alliance, which is if we have a new member joining the Alliance, we like to share a little bit about their Star Wars knowledge and what makes them a fan of Star Wars. So we're going to be asking the five most important Star Wars questions. Yep. And let's get started with the first one. Nate? Do you remember your first time watching Star Wars and share that experience?
I can't say I remember the first time, but I know that it was with my dad. I was fortunate enough to have a huge nerd for a dad. He's the one who turned me on to Star Wars. One of my biggest prized possessions now is the box set of the original one that hasn't been destroyed or altered. We would just watch them, you know, over and over again, and from a point of when I was too young to know what was going on, but I still liked it. And, you know, came ingrained in me, and I went to, when the prequels came out, I went to all of them with my family, you know, for the premieres and stuff. It's always been around. Same thing with like Lord of the Rings and other things like that, that directly came from my dad being a big book guy and being into sci-fi and stuff like that. So he just turned me on to it. So it's just kind of always been around for me.
Were you big on the Star Wars books growing up too?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to get that to that in a later question.
Okay, all right. Then we'll get to that in a later question.
It's not spoiling.
Right, exactly.
So what is your favorite film of the franchise?
This is a tough one because it's probably 4, just because I think it has the most of the Star Wars magic.
Yeah. Untainted Star Wars magic.
Yeah. My personal favorite is probably 3, just because of the plot significance. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Darth Vader guy, so I like to see that, even though it could have been done differently, in my opinion. You know, take it or leave it.
So you're familiar with the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Because he's wise. I don't know if you know, but people said he was wise.
I had to hit you with that.
I deserve that one.
But that's interesting. Like, I like how we're getting to the point now where the prequels belong to a certain generation just because those are the ones that they were raised on. You know, this was all a part of me growing up watching 4, 5, and 6. But with 1, 2, and 3, those are mine because I went to go see them.
And that's very much how it feels. And that's why, especially as I get older and I rewatch those ones especially, you know, it's crazy to me the CGI, like, at that time was mind-blowing and groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And just in the few years that have gone by, you look at it now and it's like, this looks terrible, you know, but when you remember it as a child, you don't remember it like that at all. Because, of course, when you're a kid, it all looks fantastic.
Now, do you think the space battles still hold up? Because I think the space battles still hold up. I do.
I think they do because, more or less, they're almost entirely computer generated.
Yeah. Whereas so you're
I think
not now, trying to mix the blending real technology, stuff.
Yeah, just watching, you know, I went and rewatched some of the fight scenes even, and just like when Darth Sidious is fighting and they have his face CGI'd on there because he's not doing those moves, flipping around and stuff.
Hold up, he didn't. Stop the show.
Ian is very flexible, but not that flexible.
Yeah.
Not, oh, so he can't didn't do that
quickly.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
That's what it was.
It's just he's very valuable. They can't risk him getting hurt.
Oh, okay. You know, I thought it was Tom Cruise in it.
It wasn't my choice.
It's an insurance thing. Yeah. He could do it, but
He was like, hey.
Yeah.
He taught the stuntman, but in a safe environment. So when they were on set, it was time to roll that.
So all the flippy moves, he was like, I can still do this, guys, but you know, insurance.
I can agree with you on the space battles, but like even the scenes where it's just like a couple of Jedi walking down a hallway.
Yeah,
and he's like, this isn't a real place.
Well, there's just some stuff too, like, especially now going to film school and studying film and being a film snob now. Mm. Like, there's some things about the original trilogy just in terms of like composition and like the acting and that just make them great films on their own outside of like the sci-fi-ness. And a part of me has to rationalize that because it's my childhood and because I love the whole, you know, the world and the lore of Star Wars, I accept the first three movies to be okay. Because in my opinion, in terms of strictly like film, they're subpar from where they should be. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it does it justice.
No, but don't worry. We support every film here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have our criticisms about each film.
Right.
But we don't get on anybody's cases for liking the prequels.
Yeah, Star Wars is crazy, but we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of the things of like, I want to see, there's so many stories, and it's different now because the canon is much smaller, but there's so many stories that would be cool to see, you know, and it's like, I would like to see any adaptation of it, even if it's not like straight up, it's just nice to see somebody attempt to put it out, you know, and people enjoy it, even if it's not perfect.
Yeah, let's just get some more out there with more, as many voices as possible speaking through this lens. I got you.
Exactly.
Who's your favorite character?
And this is where I'm torn. If we're talking straight canon, just the movies, it's Darth Vader for sure. All
right.
But I'm also a really big Qui-Gon Jinn fan.
Yeah,
Liam Neeson's performance I think is one of the best ones in that film. And I think just the character, I read the Jedi Apprentice books. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's all about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan's like training. And just the way that they present him as, he's just such a strong, noble warrior, but he's very humble at the same time. And just the way that he approaches situations and teaches Obi-Wan, I'm just a big fan of his character. And I think the way that they played it in the movie played into how the books and stuff obviously were written after, but I think it all melded together really well. It was perfect in my head. You know, Liam Neeson running around with a kid.
He's not afraid to dark side it up a little bit.
He's realistic, and he has his own honor code that he believes in, and that's what kind of helps him not be corrupt.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Because he holds himself accountable, whereas I feel like a lot of the Jedi is about holding each other accountable.
And sticking to the code. The code and things
but
like
also,
that.
But like, also, you're sticking to the code because if you don't, I'm going to tell Master so-and-so, whatever. Yeah. I feel like that is a thing that...
Or back in high school.
Or also believing they're right for the sake of being right just because they're Jedi.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that series because it was great in, like, expanding the universe and going to different planets and seeing all different types of economic lifestyles and stuff, because once you leave the temple in Coruscant and, you know, you have this idea of what the world is and stuff and how things are supposed to be, when you actually get out there and start getting into combat and getting into all these different situations and meeting all these different alien races and all their things that they do and stuff, like, it's really interesting to me, for these to be, like, young prepubescent boys who are already, or female, whatever, that are already learning about yourself, you're already growing up. You also have this teacher teaching you how to be a warrior, and you're going to different planets. So, great book series. And
no, Qui-Gon Jinn has always been one of those characters where, at least from a screen perspective, I think we've always needed more. And the couple of appearances where the character has appeared in Clone Wars was just like, yeah, more. Let's just do more of that. Let's do the ghost of Qui-Gon doing like silly adventures.
I really think a Jedi apprentice would make a perfect Netflix series show just like, because you wouldn't even have to do too much CGI, because it's more of like it's almost like a detective kind of a thing where they're like doing clues and solving cases, almost
like sort of a procedural route
of a thing. I think that would work.
I'd be about it.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got a lot of ideas for Netflix that come out of here, and that one
I'm sure they're looking at all of them too, yeah. Figuring out which one they can do.
They watch every show.
Yeah, they're like, how can we make money off of this?
That's Watch Jedi Alliance. They know. So what is there one quote in particular that sticks out in your mind as a favorite one you live by, or is there like a couple that sort of stick in your craw?
I mean, my one go-to that I think of probably most other than any of the other ones is Han Solo's I know. which is weird because it's so hard to use sometimes, mm-hmm. because a lot of people are not familiar with that reference. Even if they've seen the movie, they don't put it together. And yeah. especially, like, in order for that to happen, someone has to say I love you. And so it's an odd situation. I don't get to use it very often, but often in my head I'm like, I know. But I'm like, oh, I love you too.
Like over the phone, it's just this silence.
Right.
What?
I'm not cool enough as Han Solo to pull it off. Yeah.
You had to pull it off when you're like leaving the room,
yeah.
or something.
I need to get my my parsecs up on my Kessel run.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought you were going to go with we need a midichlorian count or something like that.
Oh, man.
No.
I don't think I would be a force user. I think I would be on the mercenary soldier or whatever track.
I'd be half robot. I'd probably be like Dengar or something like that. Just
I can see it.
Toilet paper right around my head. last question of the most important five Star Wars questions. Would you ever turn to the dark side
yes.
of the Force? All right. Well, this has been yes. the five.
Yeah.
Why do you say
what
that?
Is it? Look, you had Joel and now you. You guys are just going to the dark side too quick.
I mean, look, I've yet to see like the benefits of the light side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're looking like what. If we're looking actually, tell me what good the Jedi have done within the last, like, basically with the end of them, with mm-hmm. their last few years.
All right.
Where like, okay, you get peace and serenity, but not really.
You don't get peace and serenity?
No, well, you still have to go to war.
But this isn't...
You still have to go to... There's never going to be world peace.
Well, even more so.
Okay, why be a peaceful monk... when I can be an all-powerful Sith Lord.
I will say, this question doesn't say, will you be a Jedi or a Sith? This just says, will you turn to the dark side of the Force? So that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go full light, power, like full that, but you're just going to be just a little dark gray, maybe a little bit darker gray.
I would be the one where, like, the Empire recruits you, and, you know, you come in, you're like, oh, the Empire's so cool, because you see all the propaganda and stuff, and then you find out all the dark stuff, and they're like, are you cool with that? And be like, yeah, all right.
What's my paycheck?
Team.
What's my paycheck? Like, where's my room?
With Darth Vader saying you can do it, it's like,
look,
you know,
the
you're
Empire
like,
did a lot of good, okay?
You're excited. You're like, hey, I can't.
All
do
these
it.
Movies are rebel propaganda.
Oh,
that's
man.
Why I'm so excited for Battlefront. all right. That was really enlightening. I'm really excited to know that Qui-Gon Jinn's one of your favorite characters. He's a good character to have as a favorite.
He's a good guy.
I thought so.
He's
yeah.
down with us.
Those books really left an impact on me. I was surprised. I kind of want to go back and read them, but.
Who has the time?
Well, it's just the nostalgia effect of like you go back and you read it and it's like, wait a minute, this is not
because
like,
memories.
It's written for like 9, 10, 12, you know, like not. I'm a little bit above that in my reading level, so
like a pre-college reading level. Yeah. I don't know, dude. Like they call the Lost Stars a young adult novel. That ain't a young adult novel.
Yeah,
boy.
I mean, but the thing is too, a lot of times that when you're the young adult. Market, like, these are already kids that read a lot, so they already read higher than their reading level
more
often than not.
Yeah.
That's been my experience.
So, I want to talk a little bit about, there wasn't any, like, heavy news this week. We're coming off of two straight weekends of conventions with news. so, the first one that actually is pretty quick is John Powell was revealed to be scoring the Han Solo movie. Is anybody familiar with his previous work?
I took a look at it, but I can't say I'm really familiar.
His score on How to Train Your Dragon is awesome. Really good. He did a lot of DreamWorks, and there was a live action one.
I remember enjoying the movie.
He did. He also did the Bourne movies. So he's done action, and now I'm on now. And he's done stuff with a wider audience. So he's got a good style. He can morph around it and be pretty good. But like this I think will be the first major departure, because like Giacchino doing Rogue One, it was still Star Warsy, but I don't expect this to be super Star Warsy.
Well, I'm curious if this is. if this has to do with a director change, if he was already, if they were already planning to bring him in, if he was already, you know, his sound was already part of their idea, or if this is a new direction that they're going in with the film changing in some way. Because the film, the, whatever direction the film was going before has changed.
Oh,
because,
definitely.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
It, that's why it went down the way it went down.
Like, well, yeah. Well, no, but that's the thing is, looking at John Powell's resume being, I mean, with exception of the Bourne films, being a little bit more family friendly, he would make sense to be a part of this in the pipeline. But it, I still think it fits for a Han Solo movie. But you had sent us a story earlier about the director of photography staying on from Lord and Miller. That's not as surprising to me. You know, that's something where it was, you know, how this movie is supposed to at least look. And then Ron Howard will handle how it's supposed to feel. They put those together, and at least to have somebody like that in the transition room.
Right, but I mean, it also very easily could have been replaced, depending on how much of the footage they were wanting to reshoot, or how much of it they deemed unusable, or whatever. You know, we still don't know what it was that rubbed Kathleen the wrong way, but something there did not sit right with them, whether it was tone visually or maybe the dialogue or something.
Because if it looked good, why let go of the guy?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He's definitely capable. But also, too, I definitely see a world where Ron Howard comes in and brings in his own DP because he's worked with, you know, legendary DPs across the board.
Sure.
But now, I don't know. I'm excited. I like the way this guy shoots a lot. Selma, I thought, looked fantastic. And he did another one recently, too, that was on the list. I forgot.
Me too.
But
that's right.
Very good.
Now on the thing of the score, the only thing that kind of worries me is, and I know John Williams cannot do everything. I understand.
He's working on 8 right now.
And I know he can't do everything. But something that kind of worries me is how should I say, getting into like the generic sci-fi music sound. And I don't know how to define it. And if you're watching at home, or you guys,
I know exactly what you mean.
Like the sci-fi, the generic sci-fi score music, and that's the only thing that I'm kind of worried about getting into. Because, and of course, you know, you can't have. I mean, John Williams can only do so much, but I want it to still feel like Star Wars, and part of feeling it is the music, the musical cues, and you know, like the sound. Well, I guess he won't do the sounds, but you know what I mean. The audio part of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't want it to feel like it's a. And this is no diss. A show on sci-fi, and this is no diss. There are some great shows on sci-fi.
There's some great shows on sci-fi,
but at times
this ain't Dark Matter the movie. Oh. And Killjoy is the movie.
I love Dark Matter, but it's Star Wars has a certain specific brand that it's kind of established,
sure,
musically, you know, and it just worries me sometimes. Mm-hmm. But after I see that first trailer, I'll just be like, oh, okay, cool, we're there.
No, I agree with you in that I don't want it to sound like a sci-fi show, but I don't want it to sound like a Star Wars film in the same way that, to me, I think Rogue One, it fit in, but I think in terms of a lot of ways, it was different.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sonically also, and like just in like a, they definitely approached it, in my opinion, as more of like an action movie, more of like a war film. So I'm hoping, /thinking that they're doing the same thing for this, since it's also a side spin-off movie, that it's going to go in a genre direction. I don't know if it's going to be witty buddy action, which is what I thought it was going to be, or if it's going to be more of like a space western kind of a thing.
Yeah. I think that's what they were trying to go for.
I definitely want it to be like different. I want it to kind of stand out. I want maybe at the beginning and stuff, but then after that, throughout the movie.
Not a crawl.
No crawl?
No, Rogue One didn't get a crawl. No.
I know, but it should have.
No, it should. It's a different,
I'm on the,
different
I'm
day.
On the crawl train.
It's not, different day.
I'm on the crawl train.
Luke Skywalker isn't involved yet. Now, moving on.
All right.
But in terms of the score, I'm just hoping that they take something similar to the Han Solo theme, or like one of the themes that really played and meant a lot of Han Solo, and not necessarily stretch it out, but go, all right.
Kind of like build around it,
Build around it.
Change it.
Yeah.
Up,
one of my favorite things that composers do is they take a theme, and my favorite example is Up, where that da na 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 like the original like piano thing that you that their theme in the beginning becomes an action theme, like when when it's starting in the adventure part of the third act, and then Munce's theme when they're watching the newsreel becomes this really creepy, ominous thing once you find out what
hopefully
his plot was.
Hopefully they don't try to make us cry in the first like 10 minutes.
Do it! I don't care. But speaking of what you said, Bradford Young is the name of the DP. He also did Selma, A Most Violent Year, and Rival.
Yeah.
So, all right. He can definitely do this
Arrival
movie.
Because Arrival was one of my top movies. Arrival was on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Can Villeneuve be in Star Wars?
I have no idea what you just said.
Denny Villeneuve.
I still can't understand what you're saying.
Denny Villeneuve do some Star Wars? Denny Villeneuve do some Star Wars? My man from Prisoners, Arrival.
Isn't that Denis Villeneuve? I don't know.
Denis Villeneuve. I thought it was Denis Villeneuve, but it's not him.
Okay.
But that's how it's pronounced.
I believe you.
That's the director. Have you seen Prisoners?
Have
you seen
Arrival? He's the new hotness.
Have you seen Sicario? The new Blade Runner, he's doing that.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it.
I ain't got money, man. That's why I talk about all movies like Star Wars. And then the studio sends us to the new ones.
Well, that's funny. Guys, I think Denis Villeneuve.
I think I've got Arrival in my car. I think I still have a screener from Arrival.
You live in L.A., that thing might rent. That thing might melt. You gotta be careful.
Yeah, it might be melted to the case. But moving on from there, something that I found interesting this week is IGN did an interview with Gwendolyn Christie, and they talked about how she was, you know, we were all a little bit underwhelmed at Captain Phasma's involvement in Episode 7, but coming up in Episode 8, she's a lot more involved, and she talked about how her and Rian Johnson sort of worked together to create a backstory for Captain Phasma. And what I was wondering is, we've got this Phasma book coming out.
Yeah.
Did they talk with the writer at all?
And the comic book.
Too. And the comic book as well. The one-shot is supposed to be what happens right after she leaves the screen, is how she gets off of Starkiller Base.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it's just a one-shot. But also, was Pablo Hidalgo involved? Is any of this like, oh, this is canon story now, or just what she needed to perform the character? What do y'all think?
Okay.
I'm curious. I mean, I find it hard to believe that they would operate on false information with, you know, how thorough they have been, mm-hmm. you know, recently. It doesn't make sense to me for them not to communicate and say, hey, you know, we're working, you know, they know the book is coming out, you know, Rian knows for sure. And definitely, by the way, he's one of my favorite directors. Have you seen Brick?
No.
You need to see that.
I've been borrowing a DVD of Brick from a friend of mine for like 6 years.
You seriously need to go home and watch it tonight. It is one of my favorite films. He is a fantastic director. Okay, did you see Looper?
No, Looper. I haven't seen Looper.
Brick is better than Looper. Looper's really good, though. Okay. But he's very much a detail-oriented director, very tight story. So even the extrapolation of a character, especially if she is as involved this time as we're led to believe, there has to be some validity in the lore that they've come up with for her, because I don't think that he would be like, oh yeah, and entertain this crazy thing that they come up with together
for no reason,
knowing that there's a book coming out in there, that there will be canon, and that this is the Star Wars universe, and it's, you know, it could theoretically create some type of conflict or continuity error or something. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think there's any way that happens.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be used in some way. Like, maybe it'll be mentioned, maybe it'll be tied to the book in some, like, but it does, it's weird. Knowing how secretive Disney and Lucasfilm is, even though Disney and Lucasfilm, you don't have to be secretive with us.
Mm.
Give us a call here at Jedi Alliance, 555.
Don't ever start with 555, whatever. No, it's a fake number with a 555.
And somebody's dialing it right now. But if they're going to release this to the press, it's going to mean something. Because Disney and Lucasfilm, they're like, you'll see interviews where they're like, sorry, I can't answer that. Mm. Oh, well, I can't answer that. Or they'll veer off of the question because they know they can't answer it. So for them to actually release this, I figure it's got to mean something. It's got to play into probably tying the book to the movie in some, even if it's a small way, some type of like, hey, when I first got to the Empire, sorry, the First Order, or when I was coming up through the
maybe
ranks.
The Empire. Maybe she saw the Empire, you know, as a girl and then was like, I want to be that.
Yeah, you know, because we don't really know how old Phasma is.
So she hasn't taken off her mask yet, so we don't know.
So Phasma could be a holdout from, like, hey, I was in the Empire, like, right at the end, didn't really have much to do.
I was really good at
shooting at people and screaming orders, so figure to sign up.
I have faith that whatever it is, it's going to be good, but it better be good, because I'm still, she's obviously the, you know, Fett stand-in. But, like, yeah. Fett was a Mandalorian. He was a mercenary. Like, there's a reason for him to be, like, a special soldier, you know, villain guy. Like, she's a special ops.
We just don't know. We really don't know. She's just got silver.
But it's so not... I mean, I know they're not stormtroopers. I know it's not the Empire. It's the New Order. But everything else that you see from them is the same, you know, that's part of the Empire thing of, like, equality, and it's like, you know, across the board, everybody's the same, you're all just numbers or whatever. And I know we got some of them with, like, shock sticks and now, and
yeah, it's kind of like she should be running that crew, or like,
I just want a
she
really
should be running
good
the
reason.
SWAT
yeah.
of,
I, other
of
than just
those
her standing
guys.
There with the shiny armor and the cape, like, oh, she just because she's really tall and she was Brianna Tarth on Game of Thrones, so she looks cool, like.
Looking cool does help.
Looking cool does help, but I just want there to be a reason that she looks cool. Because she still will look cool if the reason sucks, but it will be a little bit disappointing. Of like, remember when they introduced Phasma and she looked all badass, and then they were like, oh yeah, she just...
She
accidentally spilled paint on her, and it got all silver, and they ran out of
and
uniforms.
Well,
or something.
No, do you know why she is silver?
No.
So she made her armor from a old Naboo cruiser. So it is metal armor because she's from Naboo. That was like side lore. Yeah, it was like in one of the like kids info fact books.
Okay,
but it's like
there's a reason
lore,
why.
Lore actual. Yeah. Okay,
she created her own.
That
probably
should have
been in a movie. Maybe
well,
not,
you're not gonna you're gonna, well, yeah you're gonna show Naboo in the
well,
first
not,
movie
not,
back.
Not saying not no saying offense. Show it, but like. Maybe somebody reference it later on, because it's kind of a big deal. Like, her metal is probably already way better than the normal stormtroopers. Because as Chewbacca showed us in the last movie, they might want to step up their Kevlar game. Just a little bit.
I don't think they even give him Kevlar. I think it's just like a...
Just plastic?
Yeah. It's just like
a light.
Look,
man, look, you're pawns.
Look,
just go out there and shoot
that way. It's a laser. It doesn't matter how much well, yeah, Kevlar you got. It's
a scare tactic. Yeah.
It's like, look,
some of you are
going to
die.
Go.
Just start. All right. Okay.
For the new order. You know?
You're a little bit more...
onward.
More enthusiastic than I thought you would be about this. Yeah, regardless, I don't know how much time they're going to be willing to give in The Last Jedi for a little bit of Phasma backstory. So I would like to hope that it was Johnson and Christie talked about it, which helped her play the part, and then story group was like, okay, wrote it down, handed it to Delilah S. Dawson, who's writing the book, and said, all right, there's what they used on set. Change whatever you need to in the book.
Yeah.
Pablo will give it the thumbs up.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have that coming out later this year.
Yeah.
But most of the Phasma storytelling that I think we're all interested in is going to be in that book.
I agree. But, I think we'll see her do some badass stuff and be like, oh, I want to know more about where she came from.
But
and then we'll read the book.
Like did you see the panels that got released for the comic?
No. I've just seen the cover.
Want to talk about crazy
stuff?
Huh?
Some really good stuff.
We showed them.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Where like she used she was like a bomb to or whatever
thermal detonator.
That's the Star Wars grenade to escape from the trash compactor, and it's just this huge explosion behind her. And she's like, where is it? Like, sort of a thing, just like ready to move, and all the stormtroopers are like, as the base is about to blow up, they're like, and then all of a sudden there's a pissed off Captain Phasma that's just like, get out of my way.
Wow.
Yeah, super cool. I'm really looking forward to it. All right, so if some other new stuff happened, we'll talk about it eventually. But there are just a couple of things. Nate, you being a purveyor of the books, legends now, as they are known. There have been more Legends characters returning from the other side of the Force to becoming canon.
Where?
Well, Thrawn. Really? Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Seriously?
Yeah, what?
I heard there was a man named Thrawn.
Yeah, well, so Thrawn came back in Rebels, and then Timothy Zahn wrote a new novel.
I need to watch Rebels.
It's good. It's really good.
If it's such a thing,
I've come to know you a little bit more over these past couple of weeks, Nate. I think I know where you're coming from. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Because you're probably coming from the same place that I was coming from, and you may feel that way for season one. Season two gets better. Yeah. It gets better. It's still there, but it gets better. And then season three
it's like
is
any cartoon show where it's like, all right, we have to do a season that the studio wants, and then we'll sneak in the other stuff that we want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some clips of some cool stuff. Like, I saw the clip of old Obi-Wan dueling somebody. Yeah, that was great.
Oh,
the lightsaber
boy.
Thing is interesting, but I do like the art style, and I understand that it's more like they're going for a specific type of art style, and that's why it looks that way, but...
It works. Thrawn.
I watched Clone Wars, and there were some parts of Clone Wars that were so.
Well, this is a little bit more improved.
Yeah.
From Clone Wars.
No, I know. I've seen it. I just haven't sat down and watched it yet.
Okay. Well, you got one more season, so it's not like you're going to be in for the long haul.
I probably will just read the wiki and just read what happens. to be completely honest.
Look for an episode.
I don't do good with filler. This is why I stopped watching a lot of anime too, because I would get frustrated with like all the filler, and then I would just go read the plots because it's all already like done in Japan, and then I would just stop watching because it's like, why?
That's why I stopped watching and started reading. Like, especially with like One Piece don't even start about Naruto. Anyway, we're not talking about that. So like Thrawn is now back in canon, and we don't know what the long-term plans for him are yet, but there is now going to be a Thrawn, well, we talked about it last week, there's going to be a Thrawn comic that is essentially going to be an adaptation of the novel. So that might be an easier way for some people to take in that story.
Will that be canon now?
No, it's canon.
So all of the new stuff, every new book, every new comic is
it's all canon.
Okay.
It's all canon. Cool. So this Thrawn book is canon.
And it's an adaptation of the old book.
Not necessarily.
I thought it's an
adaptation of the newest Thrawn book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Not the heir to the Empire.
Not the original.
No, but the new Thrawn novel, which is now canon.
Yes.
The one that came out earlier this year.
The one that had that amazing cover.
Yeah.
And you brought in, I was just like...
Yeah, it's got a really cool cover of him on it, but then when you take the slip cover off, then it's blue and red and white, and it's real pretty. But aside from that, also Dr. Aphra is now returned in comic form, and she has her own
I'm
series.
Not familiar.
Another Legends character. Don't worry about it. But
But she's back.
But she's back. So the thing that we're going to talk about is they're bringing all of these fan favorite characters back from Legends, almost seemingly to appease some fans, but do you think that it's better in the long run to re-enter these characters back into canon, or should Lucas focus on making new characters to market and such like
My
that?
My question is, when you say Lucas, you mean...
Lucasfilm.
Lucasfilm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Unless George was in there. George is, you know, he's still around. If they ever need him, they can call him.
I feel like this was always the plan to push this stuff into Legends and then just be able to pick what they want. Because it makes no sense to just like completely ignore all of that stuff. Like, there's so many good stories, and there's already, you know, fan popularity and certain names and events and stuff that they can tease and do that will just get buzz just alone because of the history, even if they adapt it and change it to, you know, fit their storyline.
Yeah.
So I think it would be silly for them not to. So I definitely feel like this was always part of the plan. Maybe they're still feeling out, you know, who actually they bring back, and, you know, seeing how the story plays out of, you know, who they can fit in there. Because there, you know, there's certain things, certain people we know we're not going to see.
Yeah.
Just because of, you know,
just the way
the
way Force Awakens played out, it's like, well, these two kids we're not going to see,
right?
And this lady we're not going to see,
right?
Hashtag save Mara Jade.
Yeah, not to say that they could not some way insert her character into the story with just a
Marvel likes doing what ifs, you know, every once in a while. It's not too frequent anymore, but if you add the Star Wars line to that, then you can have a new story.
I mean,
based
I
on
could
a character
definitely see
Legends.
That happening, but I think. The reason why Marvel and comic books in general can get away with what-ifs stories is because
it's already been cemented, you know, like yeah. what it is. So that's why I feel like the Marvel movies are getting close. Maybe in the next 10 years we'll get one where it's like the Avengers What If, where it's just an offshoot movie. It doesn't connect to the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but we all understand that. Or, yeah. or we'll get a Red Sun movie or something yeah. that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think Star Wars has a long way of still developing, especially in terms of like more films and TV shows.
Yeah, because I've met people that are still like that thought Rogue One was a direct sequel to like Episode 7, and they'd be like, "Oh no, see this happened before, so like the next one is still yeah. coming, but that this one not is not that."
There's
one.
A lot of concurrent plot to go along yeah. with Star Wars, and a lot of history that connects to stuff that happens later, stuff, all that stuff. Whereas, you know, the comic book universe resets. Constantly. There's always a basic status quo, yeah. which lets you have a base ground to be like, all right, well, what if that status quo was in space? Or what if that status quo yeah. was in the 1600s or whatever? And then you've got a book, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mike, Michael?
Well,
what do you think about
this? Is,
what do you think about it?
I understand why you bring characters from Legends. And, of course, one of the characters from Legends is my favorite character ever. So you know I'm happy.
Who's that?
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Oh, okay.
but I do think it's it might serve them to make brand new characters, because then you won't have the situation where people already have their preconceived notions about how they should be or how she should be, or you know, so they you can't be disappointed because this person you have no idea who this person is, you know. So but I guess you can still end up in a situation where people don't like the character, but at least you're not, I don't want to say tied down to who they were, but, you know, people will always say, hey, because even I was like, well, you know, Thrawn, I really wish he had a little more screen time, because I feel like it's, but, you know, if you don't have that situation, then you won't have people saying, like, why didn't Thrawn do this, or why didn't Dr. Mm-hmm. Aphra do this? Or why did we have this? Or why didn't they speak to this person? You wouldn't have those questions, because it's like, hey, this is brand new. You can't argue with this guy. Or, I mean, I guess you still could if you wanted.
I could. I have a pretty good counterpoint to that, which fits into specifically your fandom.
Yes.
And that is the Aftermath series of books, where we do have a mixture of new characters yeah. and old characters, which there's a little bit more of a desire for the older characters. Though yes. I will say, where did I see Snap Wexley recently? It was just really, really... Oh, that's right. I was playing Lego Force Awakens with my wife, okay. and we were just unlocking characters, and it was like, alien name, this name, Snap Wexley, and I was like, ah, it's Snap Wexley, awesome! but, yeah, you should give it another shot. You need to give Aftermath another shot.
I'm gonna try. I'm gonna finish Will Huff. I'm gonna finish Will Huff.
Oh, you've been saying you're gonna finish Tarkin for quite some time, because I wanted to borrow it.
Tarkin is something that I thought I was gonna love, but somehow I get about 2 hours in, and I just fall off.
Really?
And then I'm like, okay, let me start over again.
You read it?
And I get.
No, I actually stay away from Star Wars books just mm-hmm. because the inconsistency in writers bothers me. I'm really picky with my writers. Mm-hmm. I either love a writer or I don't like them.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, Jedi Alliance was great. Or
You're right. You're exactly
Jedi
right.
Alliance. The Popcorn Talk Network.
Let's get that audio. Sunday's
at 7.
Jedi Apprentice was great because it was, you know, one guy had to oversee for the majority of the story arcs, and okay. it felt, you know, like you were reading a series. Whereas with a lot of the Star Wars books that I read later, when they, you know, this one's written by this guy, this one's written by this guy, this one's written by this guy, and like, it's just the feel is different, and yeah. I don't know. It kind of threw me off, so I haven't really been on them.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. There's been a couple of writers that they've been going back to, which is pretty pretty reassuring. I'm excited to read this new Battlefront book just because I can't wait for Battlefront. And yeah, Chrissy Golden has a good track record, and they like working with her. And why am I blanking on her name? Who wrote Lost Stars? I'm terrible. Anyway, they went back to her for they're
Golden
going back
chat,
to her,
guys.
They're Claudia Gray.
Yes,
they're going back to her for another Star Wars book that I forget at this time. But they found at least the ones that sell really well and that seem to get a good reaction. They're bringing those people back into the fold, and while they do have their certain style, I think they're more aware of being able to fit those stories into those styles.
Yeah. Well, I read a lot of the comic books, and that was easier for me, even though they had different writers, just because a lot of the art styles are very similar, and you get, you know, you get a visual picture because it's there for you, as opposed to when you're reading, you only have the words to paint that picture. So when you have different writers that use different words to paint differently, it just, in my head, I'm like, these don't match up together.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
But I shamelessly read the wikis because I really enjoy the plot and I like to know about the characters and stuff.
But so like,
I
real
just,
quick.
Yeah, I just read the, just the,
give me the
they went here, they did this, this person died, this person got betrayed. And it's like, oh, cool. Now I know what happens.
Yeah, I hope we still get to see some folks back from Legends, and even to the point where people start going, oh, they were in Legends? Cool. Like, small characters, big characters, even just ideas. Mm-hmm. Those would be cool. But, if it's gonna make the money, it's gonna happen. Because Disney is all about that. Money. Yeah, we said. All right.
Sorry, we're there. We're in sync. We've got this.
What year is it? I'm so tired. But moving. We'll go back to that one because we had a fan. So every once in a while, we go to our Twitter, which is Jedi Alliance Pod. You should follow us, and we ask for questions of stuff to talk. It's a JA Q&A, if you will. New segment. So Sarah B at iBroccoli. Yep. Wants us to talk about the total lack of Ewok representation. And I don't know, and I think I saw Sarah in chat, but just in general, we've seen, I don't know if there's a lack of Ewok representation, because we got a live-action short film, we got a cartoon series, and so much merchandise. Do you think that there's a lack of Ewok representation?
Maybe since it's been started back up, you know, that we could get a little more Ewok love, but you never know where we're gonna see them next. But I think Ewoks in the new layout, you know, we could get. For the Ewok lovers.
Let me tell you what's gonna
Ewoks
happen.
Ewoks are good.
Let me tell you what's gonna happen. Okay,
all right.
There'll be no Ewoks in the new series. There will be no Ewoks.
Wow.
There will be a B-walk or like
a Wee-walk
or something. There's going to be some little cute
Porgs.
Some little tribal.
I don't know if you saw the Porgs.
I didn't, but I can use my imagination.
I don't think
we're going to see, because they're on Endor. And like, do we really, I mean, leave them alone. Can we talk about what actually happened to them the last time we saw them? When they're,
oh, they're savage killers.
Under siege. And,
you mean when they won just, and they rose up against their oppressors?
Yeah, but all the explosions. I mean, how many Ewoks probably died in that war?
Okay, yeah, maybe okay. Maybe a
the porg is a combination essentially of a penguin and a seal.
That's terrifying.
There's already a kid's book.
You gotta see it moving, man.
Chewbacca and the Porgs is like a little golden book style children's book that's gonna be coming out later this year.
I feel like he would just eat them.
it's like the Walrus and the Carpenter, where he dances with them and tricks them and eats them all.
He says, fishing when I can just eat
kill
you.
All of these cute things.
But Ewoks, here's why I think we'll see them
really
again.
Bad. I can do it.
They have
too.
A soft spot in our hearts. Oh yeah, go. See,
that was good.
I think it's great again.
But they have a soft spot in our hearts.
Yeah,
we remember them fondly.
I think they're better. I think they're better there, though. I think they're better as a token of the original trilogy.
Oh, okay.
I don't. I want to see a new. I know. I already know they're going to do it. So I want to see
the
a new, just like how we got our little. what's the new droid's name?
BB-8
is our new little cute little R2. You know, it's going to be the same. We're going to get the same.
Still, he's still no R2-D2.
He's not R2. Oh, no,
but
no.
I mean, he's different. If you love BB-8,
that's so wild.
No, you can just say he fills a similar archetype, but they're definitely different characters sure. They've got different personalities.
R2 is war.
There's only one OG.
Grizzly War Grandpa, whereas BB-8's like, tell me a story, Grandpa.
And that's what's so funny is like because at least
wait, let me save you guys real quick. Hold up.
The reason like, why the right, reason why he talks and beeps is because it's just censoring.
That's one of those things I got when I was like rewatching the movie. I was like, R2's kind of a BA. He's kind of like a real deal.
Saving everyone's life.
He just like, swoops in. He's never scared. Like even when he really should not win the fight, he's like, oh, yeah.
Like, oh, I got this. I'm surrounded he's by other
there.
Droids.
Yeah,
let me set you guys on fire real quick. Peace.
Mid dogfight, he's up there on the ship. Let me just patch this hole up. Like, yeah, you a G, R2.
Droids just get a bad rap. In general. But if you do want more Ewoks, you can just watch the Forces of Destiny shorts that came out a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. where there is a section that on all of those stories are canon. They're 2 to 3 minute shorts, and there's a part that takes place during Return of the Jedi with Princess Leia on the Forest Moon of Endor and mm-hmm. the Ewoks.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I saw something about that.
There
I
you
think.
Go.
Well, there See? You go. There's your Ewok.
There's your Ewoks.
They did not forget about them.
No. But going off of that Ewok question, you brought up a good point. Who do you think we will see first in the new trilogy, Gungans or Ewoks?
We'll start with you, Nick.
Given the option of the two, I would choose Ewoks because I think I don't think that Lucas or Disney is smart enough to make that mistake again mm-hmm. of another Jar Jar Binks.
We didn't say Jar Jar Binks.
Well, not Jar Jar Binks, just the Gungans.
But no one was like, oh man, I hate Jar Jar Binks. He's so racist, but I love the Gungans. Like the whole thing, the whole thing was bad. All the way around. And like,
so they can't be, they just can't
Misa,
be.
No. Yeah, Misa, okay, no. Okay. Misa, say understood. No. Yes. If I had to choose, I would much rather see, you know, I want to see some, like, badass... I'm sorry.
That's fine. You already said it before.
Rebel Ewoks are, like, part of the New Order. Like, with little suits. Little, like, trooper suits.
Fur hanging out.
Well, I mean,
like,
no, I mean...
First responders. Like, they just, like, drop in.
They're the med crew?
Yeah. We find out there's like divide in the Ewok community, and half of them have decided to go with the New Order because
they can barely flip and run.
The New Order came after the explosion in the Battle Endor when the Rebels left and just celebrated and left, you know, the Ewoks all the Rebel and the post war carnage.
Well,
the New Order came in with supplies,
so they were like,
and they brought them tents and
supplies,
marshmallows.
But they don't need tents. They had cool tree houses. Did you see all those bridges? And
all
stuff?
Those tree houses were destroyed.
Build some more.
Eric B. Anderson in the chat says the Ewoks can be used in the Senate like the Gungans were. Well, maybe not like the Gungans were, but in terms of, yeah, we found this new civilization, they should have some representation in the Senate.
Well, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, to see
learned,
that they've,
no,
kind
no
of,
taxation.
They've taken their planet back kind of a thing.
Book learned Ewoks speaking basic. Why not?
Yeah, or like, you know, a translator, basic, like a translator, there. Yeah, you know, you have
that
C-3PO
would
coming.
That would just completely ruin.
Well, no, they would get
he
a program.
He steps
no.
up, he's like... And today, for instance, like, whoa,
takes out his spectacles, like parts his hair. All right. Now going on to Article 3 of, but no, give him a protocol droid.
And the guy behind him is like, me my boy,
or no, and just enforce it.
My compatriot says,
jump, 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 like every spears, and then dude in a suit and glasses. but it's okay. Now, I'm going to throw this out there, because I said it a little bit before the show. Now, drop the accent, and it's just a hard-as-nails, tough Gungan bounty hunter, who, in the course of their travels, has dropped their, quote, native Gungan accent, and is just a dude. Because that alien design can be really cool. Like, the look of the general... With his awesome, like, Fu Manchu.
Yeah, the general was fine.
Though now that I say that out loud.
Thank you.
Well, see.
Say that in a mirror and look at yourself in the eyes.
Look at this.
Tell me that the Gungans were okay.
Look at this, Misa.
All right. I think the way you can fix the Gungans is after the battle in episode 3.
Fix them.
they, you know, they speak with, you know, they hang out with the people on Naboo on the surface world more, and they you know, they're just a little more regular.
So Naboo gets a little integration. So you're saying they start busing in the Gungans to the school, the Naboo
school. They bus them into the school district. But I'm saying, like, the accent isn't as bad anymore. It doesn't rub me in the wrong way anymore or anyone else. And now they just like talk, just like with they can still have an accent, but it doesn't have to be like that, you know. And then they could be okay.
I'm completely anti-Gungan, and so I will boycott.
So what you're saying is Ewoks definitely before Gungans.
Definitely, definitely.
I'm thinking the Gungans might, because Naboo is so important. Naboo is still relatively important because Kylo wants his grandfather's lineage so bad. I think Naboo can play an important part, and when you go there, there's people that live there.
Can you imagine,
like, just
war torn? And if they by include, and we talked about earlier, including part of Captain Phasma's backstory about her being from Naboo and having that Naboo cruiser as a part of her image, it could play a part in some way, shape, or form, whether it's mentioned, whether you see it's like the next target of, like, I want to rule Naboo because whatever, that just like my grandmother did or something like that. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did we see any other, or like of the original planets in 8 in the new movie?
Or in 7?
Or in 7. It was all new planets.
No.
So I have a feeling that they're gonna stick to that.
New planets.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna see. Okay. Well, I think it's too much of a danger of, you know, just approaching. It's already, you know, they're already taking themes and plot lines and stuff like that.
Okay.
Sticking on the same planet might be too much. Also, then you run the risk of, like, oh, that doesn't look like Naboo, or this
yeah, okay,
is weird.
But the difference between that is the last time we were on Naboo, it was like date night.
Right.
With Anakin and Padme, and if we have that's the last memory that we have from Naboo, of this idyllic scenes and these waterfalls and this, and you come back and the waterfalls are dried up, all of and everything is just arid, or like maybe not necessarily like a desert, but just it's like Lion King when Scar takes over, you know, it's like dark and all the trees are dead and like all of the architecture is falling off. It's been like 60 years, like whatever, and it. Who knows?
All right.
All right, so the last thing we're going to leave you with is a little thing that we like to call Duel of the Fates. I got to play it, because why not? One of the best parts. Of... Oh, yes. We're in the energy reactor. Speaking of Naboo.
Unlimited power!
All right, so this is one that we're not doing in the debate style just because this is a little bit more interesting. Our question today, and we want to know from you, so leave it in the chat down below. Let us know on Twitter at Jedi Alliance Pod or on our Facebook page. Today's question is, did Mace Windu defeat Darth Sidious, or did Sidious throw the fight to motivate Anakin's change? Nate, you're our guest. I'll start with you.
All right, well.
You wanted to know our answer so much you're going to have to wait a little bit longer?
In my humble opinion, I 100% think that he threw the fight. I think it was all planned. I do have to clarify, are we going off the context of just the film?
Just the film.
Okay.
Just the film, yeah.
Yes, even then, still, should I argue it now? Do you want...
Well, no. Then we'll go with ours. Michael, what do you think?
I think that he completely lost one-on-one, straight up, to Mace Windu.
There's no way.
If we're going on film alone, yes, but now we'll bring the films back
I'll explain why.
Even within the films, I mean, is it expressed in the films that Yoda is a better saber duelist than Mace Windu? Is that
not entirely?
Yeah,
but it's implied. We know he's a better Force user, right?
Yes.
So if he goes even, barely beats Sidious in a duel, there's no way that Mace Windu beats Darth Sidious in a duel. He moves so fast, he just kills the other three guys, like, before Mace even reacts.
It's not a question if the other three guys are strong enough.
No, this is about Mace.
But
this is about what
if Mace is fast enough to even spar with him for a few minutes, he should be fast enough to react and, like, save one of them, at least. Here's like, the first two just get hacked down. The other one just gets messed up.
Because the red shirts, man. Come on, let's get past this. No, but all right, so the red shirts die. But
these are not just any red shirts. These are some of the strongest Jedi.
Yeah, if they're designated to Mace Windu.
This is also mid, like, the height of the Clone War. So not only are they the strongest Jedi in terms of just their being Jedi that fight, they are fighting a lot because they're at war.
Oh, those aren't privates.
Okay. Yeah. Kid is not a joke, and he just gets cut down. So... For me, that, and then also the end, too.
Yeah, I didn't like how Kit Fisto was just sort of, especially what we see from him in Clone Wars.
But for me,
and...
that lends to show, like, he's Darth Sidious for a reason. The dark side is strong. Like, yes, it corrupts you, but it, you know, there's a reason why it corrupts you, because of all that power. So there's no way that he wasn't playing into all of this happening.
There's a Kanye joke in there
Anakin
somewhere.
To make...
But, you want it, like... We know more about Mace Windu now, and we know about his skills as a duelist and creating his own fighting form.
The Vapid thing. Yeah.
But in with the idea that he did create his own fighting form, that was, correct me if I'm wrong, which is based on using your opponent's skills and power against them.
You're harnessing your own darkness, which is not the dark side. It's like different. So like the anger and aggression that you would have in a fight instead of like. It's like you're like letting it out, kind of like wild, but in a controlled way, and so
directed fury.
Yeah. So then, by nature of doing that, you're able to like turn yourself into a conduit where you can reflect the anger and darkness or whatever that's coming at you and use it back at them.
Now, in that regard, thinking about the amount of pent up energy and anger that Sidious has, you're not in your head.
Okay, can we talk about how powerful Sidious is as a Darth Lord?
Can we talk about his biggest
is alive throughout the entirety of the films?
Can we talk about his biggest issue? Luke says it. Your overconfidence. I think when they came into the room and he wiped out those Jedi so quickly, he was like, I've got this.
I got it.
And he slipped.
I can see that.
And he's slipping because of his overconfidence. Yes, Sidious is BA, super, but when you're overconfident and you think you've got it in the bag and, oh, I've got the Senate and this is all mine, you make those small mistakes.
So,
and when you have another master who can see those small mistakes, if you're watching like a basketball game, all it takes is like a couple turnovers, the wrong foul with the right free throw.
Uh-huh,
it's, you know, it's that small mistake of, I've got this. He's laughing and giggling and doing the twirl move. He's like, oh, I've got this. I've got Darth Vader. I've got the Senate. This is all mine. My plan has worked perfectly. You make that one mistake.
Time to have some fun and thinking about it.
I don't know, because I think that's still part of his plan. And I think...
Here's where I'm going to be a jerk, and I'm going to say both. I think he legitimately lost the fight. But
play the sympathy card.
But play the, when he's like, once he...
But do you think
once
that
he was
intended
subdued,
Anakin to see all of that?
I mean, I would say no because of the
security holograms.
But
Really?
I think once he was bested, he went, what are my options? And I think he may have set out an emotion that Anakin could pick up on his own frequency, because we know that he can scramble people's perceptions of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well use that to his advantage. Anakin comes in and is like, well, this is an innocent old man with a weird, creepy man face. What are you doing, face. Master Windu? And then we see everything unfold. So I think a lot of column A, a little bit of column B.
I could see it being that way. Mm-hmm. I just find it hard to believe that he would put himself in a situation where he would be at his life would be that threatened, just because we know him to be this masterful planner. That's how all of these things have played out. He uses pawn, he uses pieces. He very rarely exposes himself at all. So I feel like if he's exposing himself, especially to open combat, knowing that they're coming, like...
Well, that's where I think that his disfigurement came into play. Like, I don't think if that was a part of his plan, he would have never gotten disfigured because how good of a public face would he have?
I don't know. Because I think that was all part of the show. That was part of it, you know, him as healthy chancellor, look at me. And I also think that, that the whole skin thing, I think that's
a sympathy card too.
I think that's a forced thing that he was doing anyways to make himself look like that.
Yeah, that's, it wasn't a physical disfigurement. It was a, yeah.
Yeah, and so the way that he looks at the end of the lightning and stuff is the way that he normally looks. Right. So I felt that this was, it was an easy way for him to reveal and be like, oh, look what happened to me. Like, this is why I look like this, even though it's not really look like him. But just the, like, why would he throw lightning for so long at himself as it's being deflected, if it was really hurting him, if it was really, if he was really draining out of power, if he was really, that's not the move if you're like dying, not to, oh, he's deflecting it back at me, I better keep shooting it back at him, it's electrocuting me. Like, and I'd also like to believe if you can throw force lightning, it probably doesn't hurt you, it's probably just like a big circle just coming back out, and he's like, going, oh no, this hurts so much, and he's just using his body to channel it.
That's sweet, sweet overacting that I absolutely love. All right, so
unlimited power.
I'm actually, I'm really happy with how this debate went. This is really cool. So we want to know.
Episode. Yeah, that's sure. That's,
no, let's talk about the Emperor.
We'll analyze the footage.
We'll go frame by frame.
Him like 500 meters.
Let's do 30 for 30 on that fight. But we do have to go. We are unfortunately out of time. Let us know what you think about that, about the Mace Windu Darth Sidious fight in the comments down below, on Facebook, on Twitter. But until next time, Nate, thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back.
I love
this
it.
This is a lot of fun. Yeah. Where can the folks find you? What other stuff are you on?
Guys, you can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. I also am hosting the Ballers After Show tonight, and I do Preacher tomorrow. And Mark and I actually do a gaming podcast, Inventory Full.
Yeah, we do.
Every Monday at 6, so you can catch us there. Soon we'll get some streaming in.
Yes, sir. Really I've been testing.
I need a PC upgrade. I need some more RAM. Once I just get some RAM, I should be able to stream.
All right, cool.
But it'll look like a potato now. So
make sure to check in Inventory Full tomorrow. Michael,
you can.
I like that shirt you're wearing.
You can find me at One Youngster, which is ONEYOUNGSTA. And tonight I'll be after show on AfterBuzz for The Strain. Come hate Zach with me and Rick Hong. It's going to be fun. And daily, Monday through Friday, you can check me on BHL. Search Nerd Soul. You'll find me like this. And you can get, and we'll talk about comic books, anime, movie reviews, all that good stuff. It's a whole lot of fun. So, guys, I'll see you there, man. Just tweet at me. We'll talk some Star Wars.
Ah, unzip me. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Bidonica. This show is a wonderful show. We are going to be off next week.
Oh, okay.
Because it's our dear friend Alexis's wedding, and most of the studio is going to be closed anyway. So we're going to be off next week. But in 2 weeks, we are going to be talking about Inferno Squad. So make sure you pick up the book. You got 2 weeks to read it.
Yes.
Go check it out. Battlefront 2, Inferno Squad. We're going to talk all about it in 2 weeks. And then also Inventory Full, which is on Twitter at InventoryFullPT. Make sure you follow that. And then on AfterBuzz, we're talking about doing... no, I shouldn't say that. We're doing a whole bunch of wrestling shows. Make sure to check them out. We love you. We'll see you next time, because many Mace Windus died to bring us this information. It was just one. Not many. This is one of them.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.